I don't want someone to saw off my leg because a horse stepped on my foot.
Right.
You know, I'm just not into that.
Not my thing.
Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog, episode 19 for Friday, August 14th, 2015. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, a listener question has us wishing that time travel was real. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. I am looking forward to talking about this, but first, we've got a bunch of shout outs because the stickers arrived.
Yeah, we have the best listeners.
I agree. So quick shout outs to Ted Schrader, Keith Monaghan, Tyler Buccia, I hope I'm saying that right, Thomas Love Carr, and Eric Runyon. Ted especially posted a hilarious picture of his half lab, half couch dog meeting Bite, the Terrifying Robot sticker.
Yeah.
And Eric called me out embarrassingly because I was explaining to people outside of the U.S. how big Amazon Echo was in inches.
No, that was actually me that said that, I think. I went back and listened and it was me that did it.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was me. And as soon as I said it, I caught myself and I almost commented on it. But by that point, you were off on a tangent of your own. So
yeah, you know how I am. Oh, well, I feel much better.
Yeah, it's not your fault. It was all me.
I would have done it, though. Speaking of listener feedback, Andy Hoffman on Twitter asked, just finished Actual Reality and have to ask, when is the ideal time you'd like to have been born? And I was like, ooh, juicy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been thinking about answering that on the show, and that's what we're going to do this week.
Yes, we are, because it offers us the chance to look back at historically how technology has changed the way we do things and speculate on fun things yet to come. So,
well, cool. Well, what was your first reaction to it? Like,
my initial reaction was that I wouldn't want to go back that far. I would want to go back to like be old enough to watch and appreciate in real time the early days of NASA.
Oh, interesting.
Through like the end of the Apollo program. And then I would still, you know, obviously be around for all the cool stuff that I enjoy now.
Mm-hmm.
So my initial gut reaction was to not make a giant leap. More of a small step, you might say.
Well done. So it raises the question, though, would you go back and be a fly on the wall? Would you go back and know what you know now? Or would you, like a time traveler, or would you go back and just be born then?
Yeah, that's when it kind of hit me that regardless of whatever time period I would be born in, I'd probably end up being just a pretty normal person like I am now. And everything that I look from this vantage point and look at it and say, oh, that would be really cool to have this in the future, or, oh, I wish I could have lived through that in the past, would all just pretty much be normal day to day to me. I mean, you might have a moment where you go, wow, this is a really cool time to be in. But for the most part, it's all just an average day in the life for you.
Right. So I feel like you almost have to answer it from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Like because everything, like you said, everything just doesn't seem normal. Pretty much. I mean, like if you don't have any other perspective, you're just going to be like, oh, that's normal. But
right.
There were a couple of things. And you brought up another one, which is also if you were just going to be born in the time and not sort of like a time traveler fly in the wall type of situation like Doctor Who, then you have to ask yourself, OK, well, what would I be like? You know, can I pick King of England in the 1400s, or am I just like a serf toiling in the mud?
Right. Because if I'm just going to be a peasant farmer, then, you know, forget about it. I don't want to do it.
Right. Exactly. So you kind of have to, I kind of took there were a couple of situations where I wanted to take the time traveler approach and a couple where I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one I thought of was, kind of would like to know what it was like to live in a pre-literate society, because I think about the introduction of the alphabet and how it changed society in a way that is so fundamental that a modern mind can't even imagine what it would be like to only have direct experiences. So like if there's no such thing as the written word and you never go outside of a, you know, a village of approximately 150 people, you know, you meet maybe 150 people in your entire life, then everything you know either happened to you or was told by someone to you in person. So the whole, you know, when you read scholars who kind of try and reconstruct the shift from pre-literate to literate society, they talk about stuff like there were a lot of people at the time who were against the idea of stories and ideas being written down because they're sort of like a shadow of the reality. So it's like everything's third party bad.
Right, you lose the experience of having it told to you.
Right, or experiencing. Like, so someone gets kicked by a horse and explains how, you know, whatever. It's like, oh, my cousin got kicked by a horse, or I got kicked by a horse, and look at the wound or whatever.
Right.
I don't know why I thought of that.
Literature is their version of the Oculus Rift.
Right. It's their virtual reality. Good one. And at the time, apparently, I don't know how this information never, you know, I guess it was written down. That's how it came to the future for us. But the notion that almost like you had the experience of wearing the Rift for a while, and when you took it off, you were like, whoa, reality is so real.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine if you can't take off the goggles, which is kind of what has happened to us with the written word and being able to experience all these ideas across time from all of these people. It's not the same thing. Like listening to Jimi Hendrix at Monterey, I thank my lucky stars that there's a recording of that, but it's nothing compared to being there.
Right.
So, you know, having stories and ideas encoded as words is kind of a lame encoding, as we've talked about in the past, leaves a lot of interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you never had that encoding baked into your brain would be so different. I feel like the whole world would be more real. Like everything would be more vibrant. I wouldn't be looking at stuff and breaking it down into the, you know, how would I describe this, or breaking it down into the concept of words, or even storing it in my mind using words. I'd have to use it written words.
Oh, that's so weird. Because it totally changes the way you think. I get what you're saying about everything being more real, but it would also be so much more limited. But there too, you'd be living in that time, so you wouldn't know the difference. So presumably, you wouldn't care.
But so here's the thing: I would want to know. I need both. I need to know the difference.
Need the perspective of now.
Yeah.
See, I don't think you could fully appreciate it. But at the same time, if you didn't have the experience, you wouldn't know to appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I almost, or maybe transition through it or something. Like
yeah, go through the mind blow that it would be.
Right. I want to just flip a switch and switch my brain to that other way and be like, whoa, like, whoa, it's super trippy.
Yeah.
And then flip it off. And like if the me from pre-literate society, I'm imagining, you know, people back then, everything, your only idea storage was your brain, your memory.
Pictures on a cave wall.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. That's true too. So one wonders, maybe they had an amazing memory. They probably did. And they probably had all sorts of tricks to remember stuff, like songs, like, you know, story songs and stuff like that. So on the one hand, maybe if I went back, it'd be like, what? Like, I can't believe how great my memory is. Like, I can't remember what I had for breakfast today, you know, because that's not really a viable, it's not really a survival skill. But so like the preliterate brain jumping into my current brain, I imagine would be like blown away by the level of awareness that a modern brain has around a bizarrely wide range of topics that would never, you know, be like Clockwork Orange with your eyes pulled open, like, you know, like all this, everything. And it's like a vast quantity of data that's all second, third, fourth, fifth hand data, but it's just a vast quantity of it.
Whereas they would be specialists on their life.
Yeah, they could probably remember. They could probably remember tons of stuff from every period of their life because it's not getting crowded out with other stuff that's not related or relevant.
Right.
Once I became aware of the fact, or at least the supposition that mm-hmm. our brains change so much post-alphabet that I've always kind of felt like, man, that would be cool to have that sort of like pure interpretation or something. I don't know how to explain it, but it feels like something I'm missing out on.
I'm noticing there's probably a slight difference in the approach you took and the approach I took. Mainly, I found it interesting that my immediate thoughts were not to say, even though we talk about technology and as much as I love technology, I didn't think for a couple of steps through this that I would like to go into the future. the other thing that came to me after like the early space program was ancient Egypt and the building of the pyramids and all of that.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I'm realizing that I really just want to see all of the awesome, great human achievements that have happened.
Mm-hmm. An early reaction I had was there were a bunch of times that popped in where I was like, I definitely wouldn't want to be alive then. Like, I thought of a lot of times I would want to avoid.
I don't want to be in Europe in World War II. I don't want to be in Europe during the Black Plague. Europe may not be a popular spot for me.
Yes, a big stretch of time.
Yeah, but there are many things that, looking at them historically, fascinate me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way I would want to live during that period. Like anything in the medieval times.
Yeah.
I find it's super interesting to study, but it just sounds like really a horrible and uncomfortable and smelly and disease-ridden existence that I would not want to experience in any shape, form, or fashion. Because I think even if you're royalty, you're basically just the quality of life compared to what it is at any point in this century.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I had to be born any time, I would have been born like roughly when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe a little later, who knows? I guess it depends on how long I'll probably live. But like, just like straight up medical science, like that alone, like I don't want leeches on me at all. I don't want someone to saw off my leg because a horse stepped on my foot.
Right.
You know, I'm just not into that. I'm not into having my leg sawed off with no anesthesia.
Not my thing.
That's not my thing.
So then what do you think about the future? The future is so hard to say, oh, I'd like to be born 50 years from now or 100 years from now.
Yeah,
because
it gets weird.
You don't know how fast things are going to happen and exactly what's going to change.
Right.
So I guess maybe take the perspective of what technology would you like to, like if you can't pick a year, then what sort of technology or society in the future would you like to?
Well, so the obvious one is that I'd like to go forward in time to the point where there are time machines so that I can
right,
just
exactly.
go back and jump
yeah,
around.
That's the obvious one.
Right. The technology, it's hard to say because I think that I can't predict 5 years what the technologies are even be, right. But it would be amazing to be at, you know, to just pop into a time when we had colonized other planets or discovered alien life or, you know, found that one thing would definitely be space travel becomes like air travel.
Common. Yeah.
That would
be
cool.
Same here.
The other thing is that I think it would be wild to live in a time when the energy thing is just solved. Like whether it's fusion or
I was thinking about that too, because I thought about if you're going to the near future. Honestly, I think on the energy and environmental front, we're going to hit a point in a couple of generations. We're going to have to address it.
Yeah, it's the energy thing's the hard limit, I think, on a lot of the technology stuff.
It is renewable resources and all of that sort of thing. We're going to like the alternative energies that we're looking into now, like solar and wind.
I want like dilithium crystals. Like I want a totally. Like, whoa, guess what we found at the bottom of the ocean? These little mini fusion reactors that you can put in your house that are totally not dangerous.
Well, see, if we could do clean and safe nuclear power, that would be the way to go. But
so if you were going to, it's tough to talk about the future stuff because it's like pretty much like, well, I don't know. It might be dystopian future of like poisoned earth, you know,
right.
And don't really want that. But if you could project yourself into a known sci-fi universe from something you've seen or read, what would you pick?
Excluding Doctor Who, where time travel is real and we can.
Yes.
Wow. A known universe. What would I pick? That's a tough one to just throw on me spur of the moment like that.
I probably have to go Star Trek, original Star Trek, where you can transport yourself around.
Mm-hmm.
At least the humans are more or less, their heads are in the sort of we won't interfere type of mentality.
Everyone gets along.
Yeah, you can
poverty do. Poverty has been eliminated.
Yeah, warp
sort
travel.
Of utopian.
Yeah, it is sort of utopian, isn't it? I mean, you got Klingons and Romulans and stuff, but if you don't mess with them, they don't mess with you. So I don't know.
Yeah, human society in Star Trek is very utopian. It's like, oh, we've figured all this out. We've solved poverty. No one's hungry. Everyone's educated. We don't even need currency anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets along. There's no war.
The medical technology is amazing.
Yeah, human technology in Star Trek is extremely utopian,
mm-hmm.
which might be one of the things that kind of sort of puts me off to the franchise a little bit, because it just seems, I don't know, it seems very unrealistic. Not that it isn't a good thing to strive for. I just think human nature doesn't work that way. We're always going to have, unfortunately, we're always going to have wars and conflicts. And unfortunately, there's probably always going to be poverty and hungry people. We can and should work toward minimizing all of those things. But I think part of it is just the nature of being human. That was a depressing tangent.
No, but that gives me a good leaping off point, which is if you could project yourself into Ray Kurzweil's future, where mm-hmm. we upload our consciousness into something that basically supersedes our human frailties, then all of a sudden you don't have hunger and sickness or even mortality.
Right, because you're in a virtual existence, like you, not in the sense of putting on a pair of virtual VR goggles, you're in a virtual existence in the sense that that's where you exist on a hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, you basically become an AI.
Yeah.
So, like, does that hold any allure for you?
Not really.
Yeah, me neither.
I think if I could do anything, that would be incredibly boring.
It's so hard to imagine. Like if you take, it's like, okay.
It'd be fun for like 6 months and be like, okay, I've done everything.
But maybe. Yeah, I mean, that would be torture. Oh, I'm immortal and I'm bored for eternal eternity. Somebody unplug
someone
me, please.
Delete me.
Right. And that was actually a plot theme in Neuromancer. There was an AI that was encoded as firmware. So mm-hmm. he basically, every time you woke it up, it's kind of like starting a level over in a video game. He always was, every time you woke him up, basically, he was back to that torturous, like, he just couldn't grow, basically. He would,
yeah.
Anyways, so anyway, so it's, but it's a tough choice. Like, you want to have all the human frailty type stuff, mortality, etc., or do you want to give up your body and trade your body and all of that stuff for immortality of your intellect? That's, I'd probably have to sit down and think about that.
It's like, I would have to think about it, but my gut reaction is the choice that's not immortality.
Hmm.
Because as great as it sounds on one level, immortality has always sounded to me just like a pretty horrible thing in reality.
I guess. I mean, it depends on obviously a million things, and this is total.
Yeah, but there too, that would solve my problem with sleeping. Because part of the reason I don't sleep as much as I should now is because sleeping just feels like such a huge waste of time. And if I were going to live forever, I could be well rested and do all the cool stuff I want to do.
All right. So, okay. So just one more bit on the escaping from your body and becoming an AI. What if your whole family did it and you could kind of hang out with them forever, but you could never hug them?
That depends. Do I have to hang out with them forever?
I'm just saying you could.
And are we talking immediate family or? Because there's some of my family I don't want to hang out with forever.
True facts.
A lot of my family I don't want. Anyway.
Fair enough.
But that does make it more appealing, the idea that, well, then again, what if they decide not to and you're left with, what if like there's a huge fight and argument fallout with your family? Like, what if you're all living together and you're a happy eternity and Cooper gets pissed one day and is like, I'm never talking to you again, and like literally lives up to it. And so you have immortality to go, oh, my son doesn't talk, you know?
Yeah. Whether or not it's eventually going to be possible to convert your memories and intellect into data and then upload it into a machine, whether or not that will ever be possible, people, the sort of flip side argument to Kurzweil is that you, if you don't have mortality, if you don't have to face sickness and mortality and hunger and all these other stimuli, you're not human anymore. So like
you, I agree with that.
Right. So you've evolved into a new kind of consciousness, and it's totally different than other. I mean, I've read an article, take it with a gigantic grain of salt, where, you know, this scientist, medical scientist, saying like, look, we're going to have dying of old age solved. It's going to be solved. You will be able to live for as long as you want to live. You might still get hit by cars and stuff like that. You're not Superman, but that the sort of aging process will be fixed.
Are you going to be able to live as long as you want to live, or as long as you can afford to live?
Oh, talk about society hierarchy.
Yeah, and then you get into like black market.
Man, that I would want to see that. Like, I would definitely want to like fast forward to the future and be like, how does that play out? Like, what's an 800-year-old dude look like?
And what's going to be the average lifespan that people decide, okay, this is long enough?
Yeah, like when people start to, you know, like in the Dresden books of vampires and the wizards, they all have like, you know, they live for millennia, and they start to get, you know, there are situations that come up where not everybody has this massive lifespan. So they tend to get really picky about who they fall in love with and stuff like that, because they get a little bit tired of, like, you know, burying loved ones, basically.
Well, yeah, it's you know, it's the doctor.
Yeah, exactly. The Doctor Who scenario.
Again, it's one of those things, like, if the people you loved and cared about couldn't do it, would you want to?
Brutal.
Yeah. I don't think I would.
I don't know. That's brutal. Huh. All right. So what about, let's switch back to past. This stuff's getting really depressing for some reason.
It is.
So let's switch back to the past. Were there other times in the past that you would want to visit? Let's just say visit, because Bornin is too tricky.
Bornin is too tricky. Oh yeah. If we're just visiting, there's lots of things I'd like to visit. I'd like to, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to go back and experience the dinosaurs?
Yeah.
And just the...
That would be terrifying.
Just the... Watch the formation of the planet to begin with.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
If we're talking about visiting.
Let's keep it to, like, human society.
Okay, fine. Watching Michelangelo paint the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. Like, hanging out with Plato. Totally. Sign me up.
There when the telescope was invented.
That would have been fun to be around at the time when that news was kind of washing over society. I say that like in total ignorance. It probably wasn't fun at all. It was probably extremely uncomfortable to have your view of the universe, your mental model of the universe, completely flipped upside down in a way that was less flattering to the humans that who thought they were at the center.
Yes, and went largely against
religious,
political, and religious views of the time.
Exactly. Yep. Same thing with the flat earth theory.
Yeah. and like the discovery of America.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
I mean, being around for the birth of a new science, I think that's wild. Because like right now, like what, you know, there are different branches of science now and they have a million sub branches, but they didn't always exist, did they?
Right. No, they didn't.
Right. And so it seems reasonable to presume that there will be a bunch of new ones that we don't even know about yet, the same way we didn't know about whatever, gravity, or even think about it. So, God, so to imagine something that's as big as like physics to just like come out of nowhere and be like, oh, four dimensional, you know, that would be a subphysics. We can't even think of it, right? Because
we can't, because it's been such a constant in our own existence that thinking about a time when it doesn't exist, you just can't get your head around it. Like, wait a minute, you mean physics didn't exist at some point. There used to be no math. And well, it's not that these things didn't exist; it's that we hadn't found them yet, or
they hadn't become.
I don't even know if that's accurate.
Yeah, I don't either.
To say we hadn't found them.
Is math an invention or a discovery?
That's a really good question.
I think it's an abstraction of reality that is useful. So
yeah, that makes logical sense.
Right. So if you could imagine like a brand new abstraction, if you look at it like that and you imagine that infinity, if you want to get super trippy and you imagine that reality is, you know, everything's connected and it's a continuum and the divisions we see between entities are actually in our head more than anything else. Then you can imagine taking a completely different viewpoint that is, you know, schmizzix.
Right, something we can't, a completely different viewpoint that we can't even fathom right now.
Yeah, a different abstraction that would have its own, you know, it would still follow the scientific method or it wouldn't be a science, but
you remember when they believed in colors?
right. Can you imagine? Yeah. They didn't realize colors were actually an alien species or whatever, you know, colors are actually a virus.
Right. Back when they thought trees couldn't talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. Like if you flip it around and you apply, you say you get a new abstraction, has new hypotheses that are proven in new ways using a scientific method. And if the new abstraction is useful for predicting risk and probability, then it's useful.
It'll stick, yeah.
Right. So if it turns out that it's, yeah, I mean, that would be great. I have a feeling that's going to happen, though. I feel like doing manufacturing at the atomic level, I feel like could actually create new abstractions.
Definitely. I feel like nanotechnology is going to happen. It might be an interesting show topic in and of itself one day.
Yeah. Nanotubes, baby.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then there's the whole biotech thing.
Yeah.
Which we've actually kind of talked about in the past, and it gets scary fast. So, like, would you want to be born in a time when, there's a million things. Like, would you want to be able to just sort of swap body parts in and out or just pick a body? Yeah. Yeah, of course. Would you want to be able to just pick a physical shape based, you know, as easily as you can change your Minecraft skin?
Right.
Would you want that?
I think I would want that a lot more than I would want to upload my brain to some virtual world.
Yeah, me too. It's probably short-term thinking on our parts, but I agree with you. But not just that you would have that power, but that you lived in a society where everyone could do that. Mm-hmm. What would happen? Would everybody end up looking like, I don't know, pick someone, Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt or whatever? Or would people's individuality come out the same way it does when they pick their clothes, but it extended to the length of their arms, for example?
I think it'd be a mix of both. I think you'd have people that just wanted to be incredibly athletic and beautiful. And then I think you would have people that would take the opportunity to do something more expressive with themselves.
I can see that.
Yeah. Which kind of brings it back to my final answer for exactly when you would want to be born. And that is July 11th, 1978. My mother's original due date was, I believe, July 11th. And I was born on May 13th. So I would like to jump ahead just to July 11th because it wouldn't change a lot of things about my childhood. I would still have the same friends, the same experiences. In some ways it would be different, but I'd still have the same set of grew up around the same people. I'd still have many of the same experiences, go to school with the same people. I'd probably still meet Richard. So all of the awesome things about my life that I've experienced, I would in all likelihood still have. All the bad things I would in all likelihood still have. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I mean, in a sense, I mean, my mom was sick a lot when I was a kid. She died when I was a young teen. That's horrible, but it's part of the experiences that make me who I am. Mm. But, you know, if I had been born just 2 months later, I'd have a working left eyeball. So I'm sure it would change more than I can imagine, but I don't think it would greatly reshape my entire life. I think it would just give me some more capability within the existence that I've had.
Wow.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my deeply profound and soul-bearing admission to the podcast. Got a little deep there.
Yeah. I'm not sure where to go with that other than to say that all of the conversations that I had around it, pretty much everybody wouldn't change it that much.
Yeah.
A little bit maybe, but not that much. So we'll leave you.
It's the experiences that you live through, good or bad, that turn you into the person that you are. And if you lived and were born in a different time period, you may get to experience something that from our current perspective seems awesome, but not only is it going to be normal to you then, it's going to fundamentally change who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a different person. So in a sense, you're not really living in a different time period because you're not you.
Right. It's someone else. Yeah. And that's the thing. If you kind of like your life, you wouldn't mess with it. So, well, dear listener.
This is probably the most philosophical we've ever gotten on a podcast.
Yes. So should we say that next week? Should we do a teaser for next week?
Sure.
All right. Next week is going to be the polar opposite of us waffling about philosophical time travel issues, where we are going to be joined by Josh Hale, who is a virtual reality and 360-degree video expert and runs a company called Village Features 3D. And he's going to share with us some of the stuff that he has experienced running a business based on virtual reality. So it'll be, this sounds ironic, but it'll probably be a lot more concrete than the conversation this week. So that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Schaber.
And we hope you join us in the future for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Or you can ask us trippy questions on Twitter and we'll probably have fun talking about them. Thanks.